First, is this a binding agreement?
Not yet. It's not binding. They made a pledge, but the proof will be in the pudding later, I guess.
In the United States, international treaties require a supermajority of the Senate, particularly after the Republican gains in last week's midterm elections. What are the chances of this deal gaining Senate approval?
Well, right now I wouldn't put them as very high, of course. And that's, I guess, you know, the real question, which is that, would this be binding? And can Obama get the support that he needs, or are there other ways that he can try to get this through? And then there's also a question of, us seeing through these commitments after Obama's not president any longer. Who knows what's going to happen after the next election?
Where's the Kyoto Protocol in all of this? Has it essentially been forgotten?
Yeah, it's a good question, because when you look at the targets that the U.S. has set, and you could say, okay, 26%, compared to 2005, that's progress, and it is progress compared to the previous pledges that have been made. But compared to Kyoto, it's pretty insignificant. It puts us slightly ahead of those targets that were set, which would have had 1990 as a baseline.
What specifically would be necessary for the U.S. to actually meet this new pledge?
Well, we have to see in more detail what the plan would be. One thing I would want to point out for listeners is that, if they're just talking about carbon emissions here, and they're not accounting for all greenhouse gas emissions, particularly methane, which is a much more potent greenhouse gas, I think we're actually might be shooting ourselves in the foot here, because I think that there's a lot of potential investment that's going to be continued to be made in natural gas as a replacement of coal. So, part of the plan, I imagine, would be to continue to shut down coal plants, try to increase fuel efficiency standards, those kinds of things. But if they're banking on natural gas, which is primarily going to be fracked gas, which has a lot of fugitive methane emissions associated with it, that we might actually be in the near term making the climate problem worse, not better.
Asher Miller, executive director of the Post Carbon Institute. What about the future of projects like the Keystone XL pipeline? How could that dovetail with the reductions the president committed to today?
Well, this is where accounting gets really interesting, right? Who accounts for those emissions? When you look at the emissions reductions that we've already had in the U.S., again, as a result of coal being largely displaced, coupled with, I would say, demand destruction and some gains in fuel efficiency standards, a lot of that coal hasn't necessarily been left in the ground. It's gone to overseas, and we might have the same sort of situation when you look at Keystone, and plans now, calls now for exporting and lifting the export ban on oil and trying to fast-track, LNG exports. Who accounts for those emissions that are associated with those? Those are probably not going to go in our books, right?
Let's go overseas, to China. Does an emissions peak by 2030 represent a substantial commitment to curbing carbon pollution in the country? Or is this more of a political maneuver to deflect criticism of its emissions levels?
I don't know exactly what's in the mind of the Chinese. I would say a couple of things about this. One is that, on the positive side, I do think we have to look at this as a step forward, in the sense that you have the world's two biggest emitters, the biggest economies in the world, agreeing to something. And in doing it, even though it's not a commitment yet, doing it in advance of the Paris climate talks next year is an important step, right? So let's give them credit for that. But when you look at the trajectory that the Chinese economy is looks like it's going to be on, I don't believe that peak in 2030 is that significant a reduction compared to basically what the business as usual trajectory was going to be for them in any case. But I think the more important thing here is looking at this in the context of what's required, right? So we're told that, in fact, the world's governments came together in 2009 and set 2 degrees Celsius as kind of the threshold of warming over pre-industrial levels. That was the kind of the threshold that they set. And so the question is, are these pledges on the U.S. and Chinese parts, are they consistent with that? And frankly, they're not consistent with that at all. You have the International Energy Agency basically telling us that we can't build any new fossil fuel infrastructure after 2017. China's talking about peaking in 2030. You've got PricewaterhouseCoopers saying that we have to decarbonize the economy at a rate of about 6% a year starting now. And then you look at others who I would agree with more, like Kevin Anderson at the Tyndall Center, who basically says, look, we need to reduce emissions 10% a year starting now if we're going to have any chance of meeting that target. So compared to what's required, you know, to me this is like somebody getting the bad news from a doctor that they have life-threatening diabetes and making a commitment to change their diet after they've lost both of the legs. It is not what's required. You know, it's a step forward, but I think we have to be very clear that this is, as I heard someone else say, this is the floor, not the ceiling of what's needed.
You mentioned Paris in 2015. There's also a UN climate summit in Lima, Peru next month. Are these goals enough to satisfy other emitters and advance a broader framework for greenhouse gas reductions worldwide? Or could they even serve to preempt a global agreement via piecemeal accords?
I don't know. I mean, it will be interesting to see sort of what the international response to this is going to be. Like I said before, it is important that talks and agreements have been really held up by the fact that the U.S. and the Chinese have not really stepped forward, right? Everyone's been waiting on the two sort of biggest economies and emitters in the world to do something meaningful. So this could help in that regard. But if people take this as a sign of sort of, okay, made a commitment here, we're going to also make commitments that are sort of consistent with that. I think that we're not going to get where we need to go at all. That's why I think it's important for all of us out, who are engaged in the climate issue, concerned about the climate crisis, to not sit on our laurels and give the Obama administration and the Chinese government a pat on the back for this, but to tell them this is not good enough. It's a step in the right direction, but it is not good enough.
That's Asher Miller, Executive Director of the Post Carbon Institute. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Abram.